Well, we have a lot of work to do in terms of inclusion within these houses. And I think that there are lessons learned. I think these things happen for a reason. The good thing and the positive thing that's come out of it is that there's more consumer awareness in terms of consumers paying attention to where they place their dollars. And also from a corporate level, from the fashion houses, realizing that that black dollar and that consumer holds a big, value to the bottom line.
Welcome back to You Have to Wear Something. It's me, Nicole, still your host of this podcast that explores all of those wardrobe decisions we make every day, all day. I'm also educating and empowering and sometimes entertaining culturally through fashion history, business, and style trends. I am also the owner of Shop GYU, J-I-Y-U. We just added some brand new scents of our Aura Mist. If you know what Aura is, you know what Aura Mist is. If you're not woo-woo, this is not for you. Anyway, welcome back. And you know, guys, I love learning. I love knowledge. And I think to be good at anything for a long period of time, you have to know where things come from. The history. I think we are all used to seeing inclusivity on the runway. Like, check. You finally nailed it, fashion industry. It's diverse on the runway. And I mean women and men of all races, shades, even sizes, body positivity. But that is a very, very, very recent phenomenon. I am dying to see this Beth Ann Hardison documentary, Invisible Beauty. Thank God she is getting her flowers finally and the spotlight on her story. She is a true fashion revolutionary. And Beth Ann Hardison looks back on her journey as a pioneering black model, modeling agent, and activist, and a mother of Kadeem Hardison. You know, just for those who watched A Different World, you know what I'm talking about. And they're shining a light on an untold chapter in the fight for racial diversity. If you are a black model, it doesn't matter if you're an Instagram model, a print model, a magazine model, a hand model. If you are a black model, designer, or media person, whatever, you really do owe a debt to Beth Ann. But before I see that, I made sure that I watched the documentary Battle at the Versailles, directed by Fritz Mitchell in 2016. And there's a reason why I pace things out this way. I do love trilogies, but I also think that certain things go together and they bubble up in the zeitgeist in a certain kind of way. Beth Ann Hardison, you know, there's a few other documentaries. And I personally just made this a little bit of a trio for myself. So Battle of Versailles, directed by Fritz Mitchell in 2016. First of all, the building itself, the Palace of Versailles, is this insane palace that was the former home of Louis XIV, built in 1623. And he was a nasty little diva, you know. So you know the palace was over the top. But modern events like a fashion show were not ever held there. And by the 70s, the building had fell into a stage of neglect. I mean, there was like mice in the bottom, rats possibly running around. Like, it was in disrepair. So it's rare for an event to take place at Versailles at all, at any time in history. Y'all may remember that Kim Kardashian gave her wedding guests a tour of Versailles after she and Kanye were sadly denied the chance to get married there. So, you know, it's a huge deal. If Kimye can't secure Battle of Versailles for their wedding, like, the rest of us are, it's hopeless for the rest of us. So, the Battle of Versailles follows an event in 1973 that pitted France's best designers against the best American designers. And it was the first time that the fashion world, the gaze was fixated on American design for once, because before that, it was all about Paris and their classical approach to design. I have many, many, many gripes with America, but the one thing that does set us apart from other countries is we love newness. We are obsessed with newness, and sometimes we do like change. Not all the time, We like to change everything, but you know, racism. But anyway, sometimes we love change. I said sometimes. And before models traipsed down elaborate runways and designers presented audacious collections during Paris Fashion Week, there was a time when it was all business and no pleasure. Back in the day, Fashion Week brought only magazine editors and personal shoppers together in intimate settings. There was no star-studded front row. Instead, people sat closely together pretty tight as the models weaved through their chairs. Pretty boring. However, the Battle of Versailles would change everything, especially when it came to the hiring and elevation of Black models. Now, you all know where this was circling back to, because I'm a Black woman. You know, I'm biased, and you know, I'm going to make this a little bit about us, but it was about us. It really was. While the first recognized Paris Fashion Week was both a fashion and catwalk extravaganza, it also transpired into a scrumptious face-off between five French designers and five American designers, and the event became known as the Battle of Versailles. It was a competition between these designers, and it was a fundraiser held at the Palace of Versailles to restore the historic residence. Not surprisingly, Eleanor Lambert, and she's the creator of New York Fashion Week. Know where stuff comes from, y'all. She proposed the idea for it to be a charity. Now, who were the people? Who were the designers? We have Oscar de la Renta, Bill Blass, Anne Klein, Halston, and Stephen Burrows represented in the U.S. Now, I'm going to point out that Anne Klein was the one woman, and Stephen Burrows was the Black person. So this was the diversity on the American side. On the French side, you had Yves Saint Laurent, Hubert de Givenchy, and Pierre Cardin, and Christian Dior, Emmanuel Ungaro, and Marc Bohan. They all were on the French side. And like any major event, the Battle of Versailles guest list would look like something even beyond the Met Gala. You had Andy Warhol, Josephine Baker, Grace Kelly. I mean, she had on a tiara and everything. The Princess of Monaco, Liza Minnelli. Just anyone that was in Studio 54 and then some, plus royalty, they were at this thing. So many other people came to enjoy the spectacle the night had to offer. Now, the French came in hot with larger-than-life sets that reportedly cost about $30,000 each. Remember, this is in the 70s. So $30,000, that's a lot of money today. So this is like a $100,000 show, right? But the Americans took a different approach. They had Liza Minnelli, who had just won an Oscar for Cabaret. So she's hot. They have basically the hottest actress slash singer on their team. And then they had 36 bright-eyed new models, many who were new to the runway, and sadly many who were paid dramatically less than, you know, the French models, right? They were affordable, and they were Black, and they were affordable because they were Black. So, you know, that's the crappy part, right? 11 of those models were Black. And I mean, this is a trailblazing moment for back then, and that included Beth Ann Hardison, going back to Invisible Beauty, which you must see, just to, you know, show homage to Beth Ann, but also Pat Cleveland, Billy Blair, Norma Jean Darden, China Machado, who was a Chinese-born Portuguese-American model. So again, it was even new to have Asian models, right? So all of this is the newness that the American designers were bringing. And Alva Chen, and she became the first model to walk for all of the 10 brands, French and American, that took part in Battle of Versailles. And she recently walked, I mean, look, she might be, I don't know, she's between 60s and 70s. She just walked for Pierre Cardin, I mean, like last week. So Alva is still doing her thing, and we love that. And they had never seen Black girls look so beautiful. This was a quote from Stephen Burrows, you know, from that documentary. And listen, it was like a wild card to bring Black people in general, you know, to be the edgy, spicy Americans, right? That was a marketing scheme, right? And, you know, Robin Givens, who I love so much, guys, she is like the only fashion journalist to ever win a Pulitzer. She's a big deal. Robin Givens was like, you know, it was a reflection of what was going on politically and socially in terms of race relations. The Americans emphasized ready-to-wear sportswear and fashion as a kind of entertainment and a woman's freedom to choose her own style of dress. The fashion show took place during a time when the French fashion industry was really dominant, not only because the French set the trends and dressed the most influential women, but because the American fashion industry quite literally copied French designs. American companies used to pay a fee for the right to copy French designers. So for five American designers to be invited to show on a stage alongside the French was extremely notable at that time. So the show, it drew a line between couture and sportswear or ready-to-wear. Everyone thought it was a look for the European designers because they were, you know, couturiers. They thought that the European designers had pretty much won this. But when you think of couture, you think of craftsmanship and history. Sportswear is very different. Sportswear, ready-to-wear, whatever you want to call it, implies that it's here today and gone tomorrow. And there was so much pressure on the American designers that Halston had a breakdown. I don't know, you know, Halston, you know, he did a lot of drugs. He was a partier, but he was also extremely talented. So he had a meltdown and a hissy fit the night before because he was not allowed to rehearse the night before. So it was stressful. It was a lot at stake if the American designers were going to prove their worth and pave their own lane separate from French designers. It wasn't just classism and racism floating around this show. Sexism was very much still alive as Donna Karan, and if you know, Donna Karan worked for Anne Klein at the time. So, you know, there's a passing of the torch here. She's been being mentored by Anne Klein. Donna Karan becomes a very successful designer in her own right, you know, throughout the 90s and the early aughts. So she worked for Anne Klein back then. They were first forced to work in the cold basement, right? Not conducive to preparing a runway show. So understand, the couturiers and the men, white men, were able to rehearse and prepare above ground, right? And according to the documentary, the black models were given, you know, less than optimal accommodations. There wasn't a lot of food, there wasn't a lot of water, and there wasn't a lot of heat either, apparently. And Donna recalled that Anne Klein wasn't welcome at all because she was a woman. I love the audacity of selling to women, accepting money from women, but not respecting women designers as leaders in the business at that time. Wow, that's a doozy for me. At the time, Anne's approach to fashion wasn't considered up to par with the other American designers, notably Halston, whose creatives were worn by former First Lady Jackie Kennedy, or Oscar de la Renta, who worked for a Parisian fashion house before. So Oscar de la Renta, even though he was an American designer, he had gone through like the Parisian system. So he was respected, but he had that stamp of approval for working in a French house. The French were so in shock of the American clothes. The Americans were just so far into the future. It was about the ease of dressing day to night, and Anne Klein was way ahead of that game. How do you go from day to night? A lot of that is Anne Klein. The French production came off as stiff and old-fashioned, whereas the American show, they played disco. They were like walking out to Barry White and stuff. And also, you know, let's not forget that black music played a huge part of this too. They really, really super shook it up by bringing in the black girls, some Asian girls, clothes that were easy to wear, and all this movement on stage, right? So they're playing Barry White. And in general, it presented a more liberated view of femininity. France's biggest asset was the legendary Josephine Baker, which is so funny because she is a black woman who left America because it was so racist, so that she could expand and grow and evolve as a creative and an artist in Paris. And she was welcome, and she stayed there ever since. But their biggest asset was also a black woman. And of course, she was amazing. She lit up the stage with her opening performance and lavish ensemble, in which she wore a towering feathered headpiece and a nude bodysuit before all the Gagas and the Beyoncés were wearing them. She was wearing the nude bedazzled bodysuit, and it was awesome. You should look at it. She's a little older at this time too, and she's still got the killer body. But when it came time for the Americans to take center stage, they left guests in awe. Liza, she brought that Broadway performance energy while opening and closing the show. The Americans were really putting on a contemporary form of entertainment instead of just relying on the sets to entertain the Americans. They let the models do their thing. A lot of the walks and performances were just made up on the spot. They were sauntering, dancing, spinning. It was the models who brought the collections to life. And, you know, let's not forget how Black women move. If you're confused, pull up some HBCU dolls and see how Black women move. If you're confused, this is not up for discussion. I said what I said. Supermodel Pat Cleveland said, "We were trying to bring life to the clothes. It was bodies moving under the flag of creativity of design." And Pat was Pat is fair. She's got, you know, light skin privilege, but we love Pat because she's always representing Black women and everything that we are. But she was a hot one back then, and she was easy to photograph because, you know, she had very wash and go hair, very fair skin, you know, but we still love Pat. Pat was very popular, a very popular Black model of the time, and she pranced, spun. She spun around so many times, she almost fell off the stage. So the battle over sign marked the first start of a new era for the fashion industry in more ways than one. That was the birth of Paris Fashion Week, which took place last week. Let's not talk about the bed bugs right now, because I know that was disgusting. But Paris Fashion Week from last week, this is when it was born. But the Americans were the ones who were the influencers. Even more game-changing, it created a more inclusive and diverse fashion industry. It was the first time that most Europeans have ever seen that many Black models at once on the stage. Because, you know, there's a lot of tokenism going on. Europe was considered a place where Black models thought they could go and work more than they could in the United States. But that was a huge myth. Only Dorothea Toles in the late 40s and Helen Williams, who was the first dark-skinned Black model, that's important, first dark-skinned Black model to do the European shows. But the doors of Europe were closed to Black models before the Battle of Versailles. The milestones literally are the girls from the Battle of Versailles. And then you begin to see Iman, Beverly Johnson, then Naomi Campbell, and so on and so on. The fact is, if there had not been those girls, those women, during the Battle of Versailles, there'd be no black supermodels for sure. Be no Naomi Campbell. It was a defining moment, and this documentary, Battle of Versailles, is a great prequel to watch before the supermodels on Apple TV, which I love. But you know, I mean, again, Naomi broke through. How many other supermodels of color were unable to break through, you know, in the 90s and early aughts? But Naomi is a beast, so she stood out. But it's an interesting story that, you know, all of this leads to supermodels, right? And giving Naomi the opportunity to be as respected as, like, a Cindy Crawford, you know, or what's that other child's name? Now I'm forgetting. But Cindy Crawford was one of the main supermodels, and you should watch it on Apple TV. It was Linda Evangelista. They humanize these women. These women had problems. Beauty doesn't solve everything. A successful career doesn't solve everything. And they all kind of go in these different routes. Christy Turlington, now it all comes back to me. All of them do different things as they begin to not, like, I hate to say age out because they still model, but it is kind of, in the beginning, a young girl's game. But back to my point, Battle of Versailles comes before all of that. And then that leads to the supermodels. And then eventually, when it is streamable, I will be watching Battle of Versailles. It had a Invisible Beauty about Bethann Hardison. It had a very, very limited release. I cannot wait to watch it. That one event set off a chain of change for Black models and the fashion industry as a whole, and it would be changed forever. That is my sermon on Battle of Versailles. I just wanted to share that because I love where things come from, history. Everything is a chain, y'all. And until next time, peace.